Peter Donalds here in for Kathleen Dunn. Thanks for tuning in. Well, the fourth anniversary of the Iraq War. We marked recently the fourth anniversary of the invasion. Yesterday, the fourth anniversary of the fall of Baghdad. We all remember the scene as the 20-foot statue of Saddam came toppling down. Well, the marking of the anniversary in Iraq yesterday, tens of thousands of Iraqis marching in the Shiite cities of Kufa and Najaf demonstrated against U.S. Presence in Iraq, shouting death to America, ripping U.S. flags. That on the heels of just earlier last month, a pretty comprehensive poll by the BBC and ABC News and others trying to tell us, they've been taking the poll regularly for the last 4 years, every quarter or so, trying to tell us what the Iraqi people really think of the war in Iraq and the U.S. presence. Well, what do they think? What do you think? President Bush himself, as I stated earlier, has said that it's really up to the Iraqi people whether they want us there or not, and if they don't want us there, we'll leave. Well, do they want us there? That's the topic this hour. We welcome your calls, as always. 800-486-8655 is the toll-free number. Again, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, as I am, you can dial the local number. That's 414-227-2050. With us for the hour, Assistant Professor of Political Science, Gamzeh Chavdar of Colorado State University. Gamzeh Chavdar, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Do we know what the Iraqi people want, or are these signals just mixed to just too mixed for us?
To some extent, we do. Excuse me. So, U.S. invasion in Iraq has never enjoyed a strong, widespread domestic support in Iraq. And the support has declined significantly over the last 4 years, even among the Shias and Kurds who initially supported the invasion because they benefited from the fall of Saddam's regime.
And the demonstrations we saw yesterday were largely Shiite, but they were also did include Sunnis and Kurds. Are the numbers growing among those groups, numbers of dissatisfied?
Correct. Even at the beginning of the invasion, the Kurdish and the Shia groups clearly stated that they wanted the invasion. They benefited from that because they despised Saddam's regime, but at the same time they asked for a timetable for the U.S. withdrawal. So the 4 years passed, and we still don't know when the U.S. forces are going to leave. So there's a growing dissatisfaction among those groups as well. The Sunnis had never lended their support to the American invasion in the first place.
If you could describe the scene for us yesterday, as we're reading the accounts here, tens of thousands, mainly in the two cities mentioned, Kufa and Najaf.
Mm-hmm.
Those are strongly held Shia cities, so would there be a surprise that we saw that kind of demonstration there? And were they just isolated to those cities, the demonstrations?
Those demonstrations were isolated to those cities, but there's a growing dissatisfaction among many groups in Iraq because the United States refuses to lay out a timetable about withdrawal. But in those cities, particularly those demonstrations, were led and supported by one Shia group led by Muqtada al-Sadr. So we can talk about his group and his intentions.
Well, let's go ahead and do that. Tell us, he's been in hiding. Muqtada al-Sadr, a Shia cleric, has been in hiding now for months, but he continues to lead. Yes?
Yes, that's correct. We don't know exactly his current whereabouts. The U.S. forces told us that Sadr fled to Iran, but his supporters claim that father is still in Iraq. But he continues to influence the Iraqi politics as well as leading some fights and battles with U.S. forces. So he has become such a strong figure in the Iraqi politics, perhaps the strongest political force after the U.S. Presence.
And he issued a statement yesterday, read at the demonstration. I'll read part of it. Iraqi people, you are aware, as 48 months have passed, that we live in a state of oppression, unjust repression and occupation. 4 years in which we have gotten nothing but more killing, destruction, and degradation. And he goes on, tens of people are being killed every day, tens are disabled every day, and the statement goes on. So the reaction to that, I imagine, was, from the accounts we're reading, enthusiastic.
Yes, especially among his followers. Muqtada al-Sadr, from the beginning, rejected the American invasion. That's why, to some extent, he was at least initially popular even among the Sunni groups because of his rejection of the invasion and his rejection of Confederation.
Does he have support, followers in the Iraqi government?
He has close ties with the Maliki government. That really complicates the situation because Muqtada al-Sadr's supporters, there are 30 deputies in the parliament, his followers, and his followers are also holding 6 ministries in the government. So the Maliki government, who came to power a year ago, did so partly thanks to Muqtada al-Sadr's support.
Is al-Sadr a target of U.S. forces? Is it official policy that if the U.S. could kill him, they would? Or would that just cause too much tumult in the country and even in the government itself?
It is difficult to guess what would happen, but I would argue that the U.S. forces would like to capture him if they could, and I don't know if they would like to kill him or not. But he certainly causes some security problems because his followers have been controlling some Shia-dominated cities where the U.S. really doesn't have much control.
I want to ask you about this recent poll by the BBC and ABC News, among mm-hmm. others, and what I just still can't quite figure out, 82% of Iraqis expressed a lack of confidence in coalition forces. 69% surveyed said that they thought coalition forces made the security situation worse, and yet a majority still believe that the coalition forces should remain in the country until security is restored. Those numbers don't seem to make any sense.
That's correct. I mean, that's correct because, a lot of people do believe that U.S. forces made the security situation worse. Again, this position has been held even among some Shia and Kurdish groups as well. But I think because of the lack of alternative at this point, they don't want the U.S. forces to leave right away because they want the U.S. forces to stay until the security is restored.
So it
seems like a contradiction, but it is not really.
So maybe I should be reading it that U.S. forces make things worse, but if they left, it would be worse than worse.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, at least I have a little better understanding of that, but it's still... I imagine you're familiar with that poll.
Yes.
And do you feel you can say with confidence that you know what the Iraqi people want based on these polls, or are we in a fog?
I cannot say with confidence that I know exactly what the Iraqi people want. When it comes to percentages, but. We can identify some signs. Again, as I said earlier, the support has declined, even among the Shias and Kurdish groups. But we don't really have reliable polls, although the BBC's poll seems very good indication of the current situation in Iraq.
We're talking with Gamzeh Chavdar, assistant professor of political science at Colorado State University, about the four-year anniversary of the fall of Baghdad, the demonstrations, tens of thousands of people, of Iraqis, marching yesterday in the Shia cities of Kufa and Najaf, calling for U.S. Removal of troops. And when do we know? When do we go? What do the Iraqi people really want? Confusing numbers from the recent survey. Your calls welcome at 800-486-8655. And let's go to Madison and talk with Robert. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi there. I just don't buy the worst and worst argument that is being used by people regarding the situation. And here's why I don't buy it. I believe that there are good Sunni people. I believe that there are good Shiite people. And I believe that religion will not drive each one of those two groups to kill each other's mothers and daughters constantly. I believe that if our troops left that country, that these people would indeed come to grips with their situation, establish the compromises that are necessary in order to live in a peaceful environment. And that's exactly what I believe. And all of this talk about that the horrible, horrible things are going to happen in Iraq the minute we leave, I believe are not true and are not substantiated. Now, if you go on the other one side, that indeed there are going to be external influences that are going to indeed create a powder keg situation, I believe that those influences will self-stabilize each other. I believe that the outside countries outside of Iraq that are Sunni-based will prevent the outside countries that are Shiite-based, i.e., for instance, Iran. I think that they will come to the kind of understandings that they need to come to. I also think a third benefit of this thing will be that good Sunnis and good Shiites will tell people from al-Qaeda to get the hell out of their country so that they can then as well live in peace, because I don't believe it's the dream of Shiites, the normal Shiite and the normal Sunni, to want to bombard our country. So, again, I do not buy this worse-than-worse argument. I'll take my comments off the air.
Great. Robert, thanks very much. Gamzeh Chavdar, what do you think?
Well, I have to say that United States' presence in Iraq is not really helping. I mean, saying that if the United States leaves right now, the situation may get worse, doesn't mean that the United States should keep doing what it has been doing over the last 4 years. Because a good withdrawal, a good timetable for withdrawal should also include negotiations with the local major actors as well as regional actors. So there should be some conditions and good management of withdrawal. We don't know if that's going to work exactly for everybody's benefit, but it seems to be that that's the best alternative for the current U.S. policies in Iraq.
Yeah, and
which is basically a military policy. So there is really no negotiation, no involvement, no willingness of engaging with major actors, both locally, domestically, and regionally.
And Robert, thank you for your call. We're going to take a quick break and then come right back. Take more calls for our guest, Gamzeh Chavdar of Colorado State University, as we talk about Iraq and what the Iraqi people want. I'm Peter Donalds in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The fourth anniversary of the fall of Baghdad marked in Iraq, at least in two cities, with demonstrations against U.S. and coalition presence. We're talking about that this hour. Lines are full, but you can get in line, keep trying if you care to, at 800-486-8655. And we'll go right back to calls. But first, Gamzeh Chavdar, I want to ask you about Robert's scenario about Iran and Syria. Might that be a little too optimistic, that everything would sort of work out, or would Iran and Syria fill voids and continue violence?
Well, Iran and Syria have interest in keeping a unified Iraq. So in that sense, they would be willing to negotiate, although at this point, after all that confrontation, political confrontation with Syria and Iran, I am not sure about the prospects of a good deal. But I would argue that they do have interest in keeping a unified Iraq. This is also true for Turkey. This is also true for Saudi Arabia. So all these regional actors do have interest, and they should be engaged.
And back to the phones we go. Jerry's calling from Duluth. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to, you know, I've been watching and studying this war for quite some time because I'm a product of the Vietnam War era. And for those that don't remember it, we're forced to repeat it. And unless we're going to make it the 51st state, there's no real reason for us to be there except for the oil. And until we get the pipelines secured, and that's what we're waiting on, is the security around the pipelines, we really don't care much about the people. This was kind of an afterthought that, well, he didn't have weapons of mass destruction, but, you know, we're getting rid of a tyrant. And, you know, I hope that the sensibility of people really kind of take grasp of the situation, because all we're doing is losing people, all types of people, Iraqi people and American people. You know, and it's just sad to see that, and that we haven't learned anything through our foreign policy. And until we get the cowboy out, this is the way it's going to be.
Jerry, thanks a lot for your call. What is our, Gamze Chavdar, what is our ultimate goal, our meaning U.S., currently in Iraq, with the shifting goals we all know over
right,
the years?
Exactly.
What's our current goal?
I mean, the argument just made by the caller is an argument that hasn't been refuted yet, because the U.S. invasion initially said it was justified because of weapons of mass destruction, and they were not found. Then the policy shifted towards the goal of democratization, promoting democracy throughout the Middle East and creating a democratic, secular democratic state in Iraq and advocating it as a model. So that became the second goal. And that goal, you know, has been undermined, not because what has been going on in Iraq, but because of the inconsistency in the U.S. Foreign policy towards the region. So the oil argument remains to be an argument that does have some appeal, and it hasn't been refuted yet, certainly.
Can you see any possible scenario whereby U.S. is able to remain, continue some sort of presence in a humanitarian, for humanitarian reasons and for purposes of rebuilding? Or do we physically have to get out of there because anything with a U.S. flag on it is a target?
Well, unfortunately, that is the case. The latter point is the case right now in Iraq in particular and in the Middle East in general, because there is a lot of suspicion and skepticism towards almost every action taken by the U.S., whether those actions are taken with all good intentions or not. So even the humanitarian activities in Iraq would be perceived with a lot of suspicion by many people, I would say.
Yeah. With that, we go to Seneca and talk with Susie. Hi, Susie.
Good morning. I appreciate your guest point of view very much, and I'd like to echo the sentiment of some of the other callers. We invaded Iraq without their permission and without their agreement. We have insisted that we need to stay there because they are incapable of solving the problems themselves. The people who continue to say this are the people who have been wrong about everything so far. Every time the administration has told us things would happen a certain way, they have been wrong and they have made the wrong choices. So for them to insist that this time they're right, that things will disintegrate and that the only way for things to progress properly is for us to stay there indefinitely, when the Iraqi people have told us over and over and over again that they want us to leave in an orderly manner and that they will handle it themselves, why anybody gives any credence to the administration's incorrect assumptions after they have been proven wrong every time is beyond my comprehension. And I'd like to recommend people who have access to the net. There's a blog by a woman. It's called A Family in Baghdad. And her sons also have blogs. And it's very useful to have a point of view from somebody who is involved in the country and its problems. Her name is Faiza Al-Arji. I probably didn't pronounce it right, but it is so helpful to me to be able to read the point of view of people whose lives and whose friends are at stake and who don't have the administration's point of view to sell like the Maliki government does. Thank you very much.
Susie, thank you for your call. Well, Susie seems pretty I asked you earlier if you have confidence in what the Iraqi people want. Susie seems to have some confidence. Do you feel that it's justified, or I guess not, but based on your earlier answer?
Well, again, I said we have some general signs, general indications, but I cannot say with confidence.
Yeah.
About the exact percentage of the Iraqis who want to yes to stay and who want to yes to leave. Again, I mean the signs have been telling us that the that U.S. forces are not welcome in Iraq at the point, but there are also signs that have been telling us that some groups. Particularly Kurds and Shias do want the U.S. forces to stay. But again, I don't know the exact percentage.
How about the same question in regard to the al-Maliki government? They've sent signals and clear signals at times that haven't, in other words, they haven't always been in lockstep with the U.S. government on policies and on statements, have they?
Right, right. I mean, the Maliki government obviously will have a lot of trouble in controlling Iraq if the U.S. forces leave. So there's a concern in the Maliki government about that. But at the same time, the government is not a homogeneous body. There are a lot of, voices in the government that have been making different arguments about this.
Yeah, and if President Bush and the neocons wanted democracy in Iraq, They've got the first step toward democracy. They certainly have a divided nation. I mean, the U.S. is divided, right and left, red and blue, and lots of different opinions. And it appears that Iraq also has a multitude of opinions. And if we're waiting to get a clear signal from all Iraqis on what they want, maybe we'll be waiting forever.
maybe. But at the same time, what is troubling in the case of Iraq is not simply different opinions, various opinions. By itself, that's not a problem. The problem, the most significant challenge in Iraq is violence. I mean, this unwillingness to pursue these, to follow these different political opinions through peaceful methods. That hasn't been the case in Iraq, and that's troubling.
Now, do I understand the statements from Muqtada al-Sadr correctly that he has called for to stop the violence among groups in Iraq? He still calls for attacks on coalition forces, but he's been a strong voice in opposition of internal violence. Isn't that right?
Well, in his latest communique, which was issued 2 days ago, he did not ask his followers to attack U.S. forces. He simply wanted his followers to be unified, both Shias and as both Shias and Sunnis. So he is simply asking for a unified Iraq. But he didn't specifically ask his followers to attack U.S. forces.
Okay. Derek's calling from Round Lake. Hi.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for a good show. I think the current tussle over terms of democracy within Iraq, our involvement, and also the current situation in Iraq covers a much bigger issue of simple legitimacy of our government's efforts and also the new puppet regime in Iraq also. And as long as this so-called quagmire will continue, and this conversation and dialogue between ourselves to the nation and also putting Iraqi people, is going to be put on a front burner, and it will sort of cover up the real intention of being in Iraq, which is actually looking at its resources and geopolitical significance in a region. Nothing will be solved. And I think, unfortunately, the lack of legitimacy has really covered up our actions in passing the region, where the current military buildup in the Gulf, and also a basic, simple understanding of geopolitical realities, which is based on power, which actually continues to shadow our foreign policy. We are building the world's largest embassy complex of any country anywhere in Baghdad, and have established quite a significant amount of the military bases. And the bottom line is that we are not going to leave from those areas, no matter what happens, regardless what happens to the Iraqi people, or even if the Iraq itself as a nation will survive. We are there to stay, and nothing's going to change that.
Derek, thanks a lot for your call. Let's start with the last thing Derek mentioned, that sort of permanent foothold in Iraq with the large embassy and military bases. The Bush administration backed off from, at least in their rhetoric, from those kinds of goals. Gamze Chavdar, what's your understanding of that part of the equation, the large embassy and the large permanent military bases?
It was a good move. I mean, if that's going to be materialized, it's a good move for the U.S. to give up on that goal. Because, as the caller said, I don't remember his name, I'm sorry.
It was Derek.
Derek. As Derek also mentioned, there is a significant problem with credibility and legitimacy and consistency when it comes to foreign policy actions of the United States in the region. So keeping that military foothold in Iraq would simply increase all that suspicion towards the United States invasion of Iraq, which was never welcomed in the region as a whole to begin with.
I'm looking at the poll results here. We mentioned this poll a couple of times from the BBC and ABC News. Iraqis asked in their opinion of local government. It looks like it's about half and half, about 57% saying either quite bad or very bad, and a little less than that about saying very good or quite good. So, again, mixed results on what the Iraqis themselves think about their government.
What is really going on in Iraq is really the experience coming from the conditions of a failed state. With the invasion, the entire state institutions really collapsed, and they could not be replaced by alternative effective state institutions. So at the local level, some political groups do try to fill this gap by providing social services, including health care. And Muqtadir al-Sadr's forces, supporters, are among those groups who provide these types of services in particularly Shia-dominated cities. They have been effective to some extent because they have been collecting money through charities. But in general, the state in Iraq hasn't been effective, and that is a significant problem.
Yeah. One last question before I go back to callers here on the state, on the Maliki government. What is the opinion of other countries in the region of the al-Maliki government? Do they see legitimacy, or do they see, as a previous caller said, an American puppet?
Syria and Iran, I mean, are obviously very much suspicious. The Maliki government suffers from lack of legitimacy among the regional countries, neighboring countries, although there may be some variation between the countries, but this is also the position of Turkey. Although these countries do not talk completely dismiss the option of negotiating with the Maliki government and taking the government much more seriously. But as long as the U.S. forces remain there, their major player will be the United States rather than the Maliki government, because everybody realizes that the power and the legitimacy of the Maliki government has been limited.
Yeah. Let's talk with Dave. He's calling from Madison. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I just have a comment and a question. My comment is, as a supporter of this, where we have gone into Iraq and helped these people from a terrible dictator, the only thing that frustrates me is the Iraqi people and the infighting. And, you know, we have always been specific, and the administration has been specific, that when they as a people stand up and stop fighting, we will step down and we will back off. They are free. They are a sovereign nation, and it is up to them now. And if Maqam al-Sadr is a supporter of that new country and their people, and if he's a leader of the part of those people, I think he's a bad person. I do not support anything he says. But he has to stop the fighting also. But my question is: has there been talk, or can there be, for the world to see a national vote in Iraq, a referendum, a vote? To ask the question to the people, do the U.S. forces, do they stay or do they go?
Got it.
Cut-and-dry question. I'll let you go.
Yep. Dave, thanks very much. Yes, it is a cut-and-dry, and I've heard the call for that before, a national referendum. You think there's any hope for that? Do you think it's a good idea?
I would say the United States position regarding the demands of the Iraqi people, I think we should really review that, because as one of the callers said initially, the United States did not invade Iraq because there was a domestic support. The United States invasion and all the actions since the invasion have been taking place to some extent, to a large extent, regardless of what the Iraqis have wanted. So it is kind of contradictory, for the United States at this point, for the Bush administration at this point, to ask the Iraqi people about what to do and then act accordingly. So I don't really see that as a feasible option on the table at this point.
And as the leaders in Congress know, you don't even call for a vote unless you're pretty certain that your side's going to win.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
If you had to make a guess, if there was a national referendum today, what do you think the count would be?
I mean, this is really difficult to guess, but I would say a significant number of people. I don't know if that would be the majority. Probably would be. Would really want the United States to leave. But again, I cannot really guess the exact percentage.
Yeah, and with that, a quick break, and then right back with more calls. Gamzeh Chavdar is with us from Colorado State University, talking about what the Iraqi people want. Large demonstrations yesterday on the fourth anniversary of the fall of Baghdad, calling for U.S. out, death to America being chanted, flags being ripped. But that was in two Shia cities. What do generally what do Iraqis want, and do we meaning the United States, do we care? Does the Bush administration care what the Iraqis want? What's the agenda? 800-486-8655. If there's still time to take some calls, we have some people waiting, and we'll get right back to you after this break. I'm Peter Donalds, in for Kathleen Dunn. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you can stay tuned after the 10 o'clock news. I'll be back with more conversation talking about the Don Imus situation. You may have heard he's been suspended from his program, the nationally syndicated radio talk show host and cable personality Don Imus, with some racially insensitive remarks, to say the least. He's apologized, but he's off the air for 2 weeks starting Monday. We'll talk about the state of talk radio, the talk media industry, and that Don Imus story. How far is too far, and who makes the rules? That's in our 10 o'clock hour. Back to calls this hour as we talk about Iraq and what the Iraqi people want. Sabu is calling from Madison. Hi.
Yes, good morning to both of you. You know, it seems I have two-part question. It seems like we this conversation has been somewhat pivoting around this this poll, and it seems rather academic. Let me give you some anecdotes or statistics that that do not lie. 2 million people have left the country. Another 2 million people have been displaced within the country. Another 700,000 to a million, it's been estimated, have been killed, and God knows how many more have been injured. And there's violence every day ever since the United States invaded Iraq. This is one statistic that does not lie. This is what is the life for people there. And one would could surmise that people are just fed up with this, the violence that has cropped up in response to the American invasion. That's my one point. The other point is to the guest, I'm sorry. It would seem to me that Muqtada al-Sadr, while he is reviled in this in the U.S. press and the administration, is really a person who seems to be feeling the pulse of the Iraqi people. And what I'm talking about, he was one of the first people to extend support when there was the siege of Fallujah, which means it was across sectarian lines. He has always mentioned that the oil law which is being passed now, should belong to the Iraqi people and they should control it. He's also mentioned about these Iraqi so-called intellectuals who've been spending time in the brothels in the West and now come back to Iraq to run their affairs, should be removed, and Iraq should be run by Iraqis. What are your comments, please? And thank you.
Oh, there is no question about, I mean, I completely agree with what you said about Muqtada al-Sadr and his power and his appeal among the Iraqis. And he did hold some positions, cross-sectarian positions before. Again, as I said, initially, the Sunnis did give their support to what al-Sadr was saying because he was really against the invasion. He was really against the idea of dividing Iraq into, you know, different small countries and even regions. And he asked for independence and the total control of Iraqis over Iraq, over the borders. So there is no question that he has been popular. And as you said, as the caller mentioned, he has been holding the pulse of the Iraqis because of these positions that he has been supporting. But at the same time, his followers have been accused of some sectarian violence directed at Sunnis. So we don't know. We are not sure about his, you know, at this point, we are not sure about his cross-sectarian appeal, especially among the Sunnis, although the demonstrations have been welcomed by the Sunni groups, and they even called it a love letter, his communique, a love letter. They consider it a love letter. But again, we are not sure about his appeals.
And I guess it would behoove the Iraqis to come up with a leader like Sadr who could really draw grassroots support. But he kind of sounds now like kind of the Yasser Arafat of Iraq, in that the U.S. labels him a terrorist.
Right, United States doesn't support al-Sadr and doesn't really trust al-Sadr. There's no question about that. I don't know if I could really consider him another Arafat, because Arafat was a secular and he was leading a secular independence movement in Palestine. My father's ultimate goal is to establish an Islamic state in Iraq.
Right, right. And to Sabo's first point, and that is, I'm glad he called to remind us, not many people talk about the millions, the large numbers, the millions of refugees. That's a story that's not talked about very much.
Right. That's a story that we don't really hear in the U.S. media. I mean, millions of people fled to neighboring countries, particularly Syria and Jordan, and there has been humanitarian crises in those countries, and we don't really hear about them. A significant number of, especially Sunni groups, have left, and those are the ones who were able to leave, in other words, who could afford living. But many remained because they didn't really have a choice. They didn't have the money and the ability to leave. So this is a significant problem, but we don't really hear about it.
Right, and as Sabu is quick to point out, and I welcome that, those aren't included in the poll and survey we've been talking about. So it informs that a little bit more. So, Sabu, thanks a lot for that call. Let's go next to Edith. She's calling from Madison. Hi.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I tuned in late and just in time to hear a previous caller make the statement, which is quite true, that we are in now Baghdad building the biggest embassy we have ever built anywhere. We have established permanent bases all over Iraq. I think there are 14 at least that I know of. And my response to that is as follows. On Sunday, October 22nd, 2006, George Stephanopoulos on ABC TV interviewed George Bush. And this is a direct quote from George Bush. "We want to create regime change in the countries in the Middle East." And in response to the previous caller, when he said, "Why do we want to install people who have not lived in Iraq for a long time into the government?" I can't help but remember that the man who really was responsible for drumming up all the agitation to invade Iraq was a man by the name of Ahmad Chalabi, who in Jordan is a convicted embezzler. But now in Iraq, he's been installed as the oil minister, and he's a very good friend of George Bush.
Edith, thanks for that call. Let's get response. I guess I didn't realize, I should know this, Chalabi still has that position of power?
He was really, I mean, initially he did a lot of support from the United States. It's
right.
A great example of the inconsistency of the U.S. policies regarding Iraq, and also the paradoxes, because initially he did receive support, but there wasn't really, you know, transparency as to why he's going there, what he's going to do exactly, and what kind of relationship he enjoys with Bush administration.
Yeah, my understanding is that there was a falling out between Chalabi and the Bush administration.
Exactly.
And any power that subsequently Chalabi has gained, he's gone on his own. And
he didn't really receive a lot of his party did not receive support during the elections, 2005 December elections. So that was, significant fallout for him.
Was that public falling out between Bush and Chalabi a PR move? And do you think there are still ties behind the scenes?
I'm not sure about, you know, the ties, if there is any at this point, because of the lack of transparency about the relationship between the two.
Yeah, and we did mention this earlier, but I want to get a clear answer from you because I myself don't know where this stands. The goal, the idea that there be a permanent foothold, permanent bases, is, to the best of your understanding, is that still a goal of the Bush administration, or have they given up on that?
I mean, if you listen to the rhetoric, they have given up on that. But again, I don't know exactly what the calculation behind this rhetoric, if that is something that they want to pursue in the near future, if the conditions turn out to be better or not. I don't know. Yeah. I really cannot answer to that question.
Okay.
Simply because the Bush administration has not been telling us about its real intention.
Yeah,
and its plans.
It'd be a different world if we could just take people at their word. But apparently we just can't do that. We've learned time and time again. Thanks for that call. And let's go next to Mary in Muskego. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, too. Now, as I sit here and listen to so much being said about a problem that, you know, it began, like, say, in the beginning of time, that man hasn't been, you know, they've had a hard time getting along, and we have that in history. It's repeated time and time again. Now, who knows the answer to all this? I would wish, as an American citizen, if the world would look upon us as a country that has been endowed with riches, with a marvelous mixture of people that seem to understand and are willing to support and help other nations who are under dictatorship or under violence and horrible things that happen to the people. However, there's the other part of this, and that is that in trying to be protectorates, which is Lord above, it's a very difficult position to be in because you're loved and you're hated. And so we went in trying to help. We got rid of the dictator, and we tried to help. We tried to help the people in that way. Then we went on to do other things in helping. But as everyone ought to know, nothing is simple. And so now it's become not just months, but years that our troops and troops of other countries have been in Iraq, trying to do the best that they possibly can.
So, Mary, you supported the initial invasion but feel it's time to go now? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, yes, only that I think about the psychological part of it. I think more in the behavior of man, in that he ought to have an answer. I mean, if the people of Iraq do not want the forces in there, then please, do you have leadership? Do you have people? Do you have men there or women who could come forward and say, we have a plan, and this is what it is, and we don't need your help, and so please, would you just leave us alone now, because we know what we can do with our own country and our own people.
Okay, Mary, thanks very much for the call. Is there leadership, the kind of leadership that Mary is looking for in Iraq, Gamze Chavdar?
In Iraq, I mean, yes, the primary responsibility lies with the Iraqi people in creating a democratic country, in creating effective state institutions, in rebuilding their country. However, let's not forget that the U.S. invasion completely destroyed the country. There is really no state in Iraq. It's an great example of a failed state. I mean, yes, we can blame the Iraqis for not taking the responsibility in taking charge of in their country, but at the same time, let's remember what has been the legacy of this invasion, and also let's remember how the democracy has emerged in the West. Democracy did not emerge in the West overnight. There has been decades of wars. There has been fascist regimes, authoritarian regimes. There has been revolutions and two world wars. Let's give some break to the Iraqis. And if the United States is going to leave. Again, as I said before, there must be some plans as to what should be, what should really replace the current situation in Iraq, especially negotiations and a strict timetable as to how the domestic major domestic actors are going to be involved and how the regional countries should be engaged.
Gamze Chavdar, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you so much.
All right, you take care. That'll do it for this hour. Gamze Chavdar is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Colorado State University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who produced the program, and John Treader for on-air production. I hope you can stay tuned after the news. I'll be talking with John Pavlik. He's Professor and Chair of Journalism and Media Studies at Rutgers University, where the Rutgers women's basketball team was referred to as nappy-headed hoes by radio talk show host Don Imus. Well, he's been suspended for 2 weeks, and we're going to be talking with our guest about that story and about the state of the talk industry. How far is too far, and who makes the rules? Back after the news.